Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, April 24th. I'm Hannah Floor. Talks are stalled between Petersburg's teachers' union and the school board. The two groups have been negotiating a new contract for teachers since January. Petersburg School Superintendent Erica Klutpainter is the spokesperson for the school board's negotiation team.
It is necessary to look at a very reasonable increase, and we have made a generous offer in a time that that's fiscally challenging.
After the two sides were unable to reach an agreement last month, they brought in a mediator. Klutpainter told KFSK that mediated negotiations are rarely necessary in Petersburg, but even mediation hasn't helped close the gap. Union reps say one of the main sticking points is that teachers' salaries haven't kept up with the increased cost of living. Teachers have gotten a 3% salary increase over the last few years, at 1% per year. But they say that because inflation has increased about 15% in that time, they need a salary increase to match that. Otherwise, their salaries are essentially decreasing. Brian Smith is the husband of a Petersburg school teacher and has a kid in the school system. He spoke to the school board at last week's meeting.
We are on track to being embarrassingly close to having the lowest teacher pay in the state. We will not be able to recruit high-quality educators solely on the basis of our community and schools being desirable. Teachers can't pay their monthly mortgage or rent undesirable.
Petersburg teacher salaries currently start near $47,000 on the low end. Klutpainter says the district's latest offer would increase those salaries by 15% over the next 3 years. The teachers at the high end would get an increase of 8% over the next 3 years. Increases would not be adjustable for ongoing inflation during that time. And union reps say that even the highest salaries in the district's offer are low compared to salaries across the state. Klutpainter says that while she agrees that low-end salaries need to increase substantially, the district can't afford to make up for inflation for all teachers. That's because the Petersburg district is facing a tight budget next year. Funding from the state has been flat for years. The district is drafting its budget for the next year with the assumption that funding won't increase. The budget contains cuts in every department, including fewer teachers and decreased activity travel. No further negotiations between the Petersburg School Board and the Teachers Union are scheduled at this time. Sitka School District and many more across the state are facing drastic reductions in programming and workforce. Some communities like Juneau, Ketchikan, and Fairbanks are closing and consolidating schools. Sitka hasn't reached that point yet, but it's close. During a work session last week, Sitka students, staff, and school board members began to confront the hard decisions that they'll have to make to balance the budget next year and to discuss how to involve residents in reshaping the community's schools. Robert Woolsey reports from Sitka.
The legislature's failure by one vote to override Governor Dunleavy's veto of the education bill has left the Sitka School District financially high and dry. In past years, an 11th-hour push in the Capitol has rescued schools, but that's not likely this time. The help that's expected to pass in Juneau, $340 per student, is about as good as no help at all, and schools are going to have to slash positions, as many as 24 in Sitka.
Bottom line is we have been operating off of a low pupil-teacher ratio for a long time, and it's going to have to increase. So that's that.
That's incoming Superintendent Deidre Jensen. She and Interim Superintendent Steve Bradshaw, who's already returned to his home in Montana, are jointly running the district administration. Neither has shown their hand about how they'll close a $2.6 million budget gap next year. As a result, the April 16th work session with the Sitka School Board was a combination of hand-wringing and spitballing about pupil-teacher ratios and the food service contract, and gathering ideas from a small audience comprised mostly of educators. Board member Phil Burdick felt the room was sidestepping the issue.
And at some point, we're going to have to say, we can't be everything to everyone. So what lane are we going to choose? And this is where I would like to see some community input. What do you want in your school? Where do you want to see us go? Because we only have one lane anymore. We've been driving down this super freeway for a while, and it is narrowing.
At the top of board members Todd Gebler's and Tom Williams' minds was continued frustration over the precipice that schools have been brought to by political gamesmanship in Juneau. Board member Steve Morse wanted to explore early retirement incentives for the district. Burdick pressed for more involvement from the public in what could be a radical change in local education next year.
You know, we've talked a lot about community input and no shine on people who are here, but you're all intimately involved in education. Is there a way that we're going to get public input that is parents, families, students? I mean, I know it's capacity and time, but is there a way for buildings to ask your people what it is that they're really concerned about?
Board President Tristan Gavon suggested surveying the public, but expressed reservations about the very short timeline before the board's budget had to be completed. Sarah Ferency, interim education director for the Sitka Tribe, suggested that diverse communities had already been consulted through strategic planning. She thought a survey would return a narrow response from anyone with the interest, aptitude, and technology to take it.
You know, nobody wants to make these changes. Like, nobody does. You know, we walked in this room and I thought I was coming to a funeral. You know?
Nevertheless, the district's strategic plan wasn't written with the seismic changes possible next year in Sitka schools. Mike Vieira is the president of the Sitka Education Association, the union representing teachers. He said most residents were expecting cuts of 10 to 12 teaching positions and not the 20 to 24 now on the table.
I think you just need to give the community a chance to react to that change in reality and not get bogged down in the semantics of what the survey is going to be. Just give them a chance to have some feedback on the change of those numbers because they haven't heard those numbers yet. I mean, that's a remaking of the entire district.
Board President Gabon recommended an additional work session in May prior to the board's next meeting. Incoming Superintendent Jensen said that she and the building principals were developing plans to specifically address cuts next year and that a community-wide hearing could help inform the board about what programs and positions should go. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
House lawmakers on Monday removed an amendment from a bill that would have raised the age of consent from 16 to 18 in some situations. The main bill requires the state to screen children for signs of sex trafficking when they interact with state agencies like the Office of Children's Services. It's sponsored by Representative Sarah Vance, a Homer Republican who chairs the House Judiciary Committee. And Vance says she'd like to keep the bill focused squarely on that goal.
From my perspective, raising the age of consent is a very deep issue, and there is a bill, a 23-page bill, that addresses that, that I think deserves its own attention.
Representative Andrew Gray proposed raising the age of consent with a handwritten amendment during a floor debate last month. More than three-quarters of the House supported it at the time. That's despite the fact that, as written, it would have only changed the age of consent in a few specific situations. Gray, an Anchorage Democrat, isn't giving up. He plans to introduce another amendment to raise the age of consent to 18 more broadly when the child trafficking bill comes up again.
If you actually talk to the stakeholders, if you talk to the organizations that work with folks who are victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, child sex trafficking, they would say the biggest bang for our buck is to raise the age of consent.
It's not clear when the bill will come up for another round of debate in the House, but Gray says he's confident the chamber will support adding the amendment back in. The Stikeen River Birding Festival starts today. From Birding 101 to Birdhouse Building, it has workshops and entertainment for all ages. Colette Zarnicki has more from Wrangell.
Bonnie Demersion loves birds. Today, the Wrangell resident is wearing blue heron dangle earrings. She's been involved with the Stikeen River Birding Festival for around 12 years. She says it initially attracted people from out of town to see the bald eagles congregate on the Stikeen River, but then it morphed over time.
Partly, I think, because you can't always tell exactly when it's going to happen. It's hard to plan a festival when you have birds that aren't on schedule. So it kind of changes something a little broader.
Demersion is hosting two events during the festival, the first in the intro-level birding identification class. She'll also be putting on a bird walk at Muskeg Meadows Golf Course. She says the festival is targeted towards the Wrangell community itself. It helps link people with the importance of habitat and the health of bird populations.
I'm kind of excited because today I heard and saw the first sandhill cranes, and they always come right about mid-April, and they usually come in hundreds, thousands even. So they're coming from down south. There you go. And they land on the delta of the Stikine River as a stopover for them.
Sandhill cranes are one migratory bird that indicates spring in southeast Alaska. Other birds that migrate here include warblers and thrushes. Demersion says they haven't arrived yet. We'll have to wait another month for when it's a bit warmer. One of the earliest migratory birds is the ruby-crowned kinglet. Demersion says they spend their winter as far south as Mexico and migrate north to breed.
So they're here breeding through July into August, then they're gone again. So we think of them as our birds, but actually they don't spend most of their life here. They spend it down south somewhere.
Demersion says one of the challenges of birding is learning their songs. She says that she's always aware of bird sounds because sometimes birds in Wrangell are easier to hear than see.
The ruby-crowned kinglet I was telling you about, I mean, one of the things, they have a very repetitive sound. So it sounds like they're saying again and again and again and again. And once you hear it, I mean, it's so distinctive that it's one of those that you can learn easily.
They are very tiny birds, around 4 inches long, and the males have a ruby crown. Birding isn't always just about the birds. Sometimes birders witness unexpected acts of nature, like what Demersion experienced at Petroglyph Beach.
There was a blue heron that was about to come in and land on that rocky area with a marker on it, and a sea lion jumped up out of the water. Did not, but tried to grab that heron right out of the air. It's like, oh, what did I just see?
This is the first year for Claire Froelich and Matt Henson to organize the Stikine River Birding Festival. Henson, who is the Marketing and Community Development Coordinator for the City and Borough of Wrangell, says that this area of central southeast Alaska is a hub for migratory birds. The Audubon Society has an interactive map that shows where the birds are coming from.
It's almost like a funnel or a bottleneck for a lot of migratory birds.
He says this year they're not bringing in as many speakers as in previous years because they're focusing on more community involvement. But there are a lot of family-friendly community events. There will also be a bird banding event and an art exhibition from Evergreen Elementary students. Many events will be held at the Nolan Center, including a ballet. Claire Froelich, who is a park ranger with the U.S. Forest Service, says their agency just put in a MODIS tower up the Stikine River to track birds.
We've seen some really cool birds, like a blue jay, pass by the MODIS tower in Wrangell, or near Wrangell, and fly all the way almost across Canada in like a day and a half. And it's a little blue bird.
Though some migratory birds will carry on with their journey north, others might stay in the area and nest. Who knows, maybe they'll even nest in one of the birdhouses people will make during the festival. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
The Stikine River Birding Festival will be held today through Sunday, April 28th in Wrangell. A Ketchikan man received an award from the FBI last Friday for his work with vulnerable youth in the community and across Alaska. Dustin Larna is the CEO of Residential Youth Care in Ketchikan, a nonprofit long-term treatment center that houses youth from across the state struggling with mental and behavioral issues. Larna was one of 56 people in the country presented with the Director's Community Leadership Award. He was recognized by the Bureau's Director, Christopher Ray, during a ceremony at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. Each of the 56 FBI field offices nominates one recipient. The FBI stated in a press release that Larna was given the award for his service to the people of Alaska and, quote, did dedication to the safety and well-being of vulnerable youth, unquote. The FBI also cited the work Larna and his team have done to support law enforcement in combating human trafficking and internet crimes against children in Alaska. In a speech during the ceremony, Anchorage Special Agent in Charge Rebecca Day said that Larna's work with victims of crimes against children has had a lasting impact on public safety for vulnerable youth across the state. For KFSK, I'm Hannah Flohr.